Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Wandering One podcast, brought to you by Wandering One Studios and yours truly, Link Flores, your host. I hope you guys are having a wonderful day. It is Tuesday, March 5th, 2024, and let's start it off the way we always do by thanking everyone for listening to the podcast, for sharing it, and leaving your comments and whatnot. I really appreciated reading everything and seeing the response. Super excited for the next episode of the Patreon episodes, the exclusive ones available on patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. If you like the podcast and you'd like to support it and get a couple of extra bonus episodes every month, swing on over to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios, and there you can sign up for a 7-day free trial to give it a listen and see if you like what you hear over there. You can also send me a message on Patreon with your questions, your comments, your advice requests. If you need some advice on a situation or whatever it is, just leave me a message over there and the podcast will be curated from your questions. And as always, confidentiality is ensured unless you specifically ask me to address you in person. Today being Tuesday means tomorrow's going to be the next day of my stream schedule on Twitch. So if you like video gaming, chill content, role-playing games, and just a cool vibe, come on over and visit me over at twitch.tv/linkibe. That's L-I-N-K-I-B-E. And you can hang out with me there. Streamlabs is where you can go to pick up Twitch merch or podcast merch. I'm going to be working on some new designs over the course of the month, so please feel free to bookmark the page and stop on over at streamlabs.com/linkib/merch. All the links are going to be in the description of this podcast, and let's get to it. Well, the news is wacky as always, and just life in general is wacky. And since we do a little bit of both of those things, let's dig right into it. Because, you know, times are tough, money's tight. You know, you go into the grocery store and you just see the prices go up while the portions go down. You're seeing more and more self-checkout lanes and fewer human beings. And, you know, you just kind of think like, you know, the more you look around, no matter how much you agree with the idea of a capitalist society or the free market economy and whatnot, you got to wonder, like, who are these morons at the top who just make these decisions unilaterally that seem to affect so many lives? Well, I'll let you know about a couple of them. First up, Kellogg's, yes, the cereal brand, Kellogg's CEO Gary Pilnick had a real hot take this past week suggesting that breakfast cereal for dinner should be the way to go. Suggested the move, saying in an interview that the messaging of breakfast for dinner was landing really well. This assertion was based off of data from Kellogg's internal departments, it seems like, saying that 20% of the cereal consumption from their customers was cereal being eaten as a snack or as dinner. So yeah, now they're suggesting cereal for dinner. Super cool. I mean, I'm a fan of breakfast for dinner. You know what I mean? You get some pancakes and sausage. You're like, yeah, and just a little comfort food. You know, I don't mind breakfast being eaten at extraordinary or unusual times of the day. But I think this messaging falls really short because he's suggesting it is saying that the cost of the milk, the cereal, and whatever fruit you might add to it is less than a dollar per bowl. The reason that's happening, dude, is because people are broke as fuck. Like I said, money's tight. People are trying to find ways to survive. You know, they're like looking at their monthly income and they're looking at all the bills. They're looking at all the taxes that are getting taken out of everything. They're looking at the rising prices in grocery stores and gas stations and of goods and services across the board in general. And they're just broke, man. They're broke. They're tired. They're sad. No one's eating cereal at 9 p.m. because everything is just flying out of the park. They're not batting 1,000 and being like, man, you know what will really top off this wonderful day? A nice heaping bowl of Frosted Flakes. You know what I mean? If you're eating cereal that late at night, chances are shit ain't going so great for you. It just kind of shows like how tone deaf and out of touch these billionaires and these CEOs of major corporations are. Like, yeah, people are eating this not because they're like, oh, I'm rolling in it. You know what my treat meal for myself is? My cheat meal? You know, my midnight snack? My dinner? My actual, you know, one of my three squares of the day is going to be fucking cornflakes. No. Nobody is rocking it like that, man. If you got that kind of money, you're not just sitting around scarfing down cereal because you're super stoked about how everything's going and you just got money to blow. I'm almost willing to bet every dollar I got that nobody's just sitting around buying up an entire cereal aisle because they're like, yo, when I get my ship comes in, I'm flossing hard with 2% and a bowl of Rice Krispies. Come on, man. This was one of the dumbest takes of the week. Not the dumbest, but definitely one of them. You see it a lot, and I mentioned it in one of the last podcasts, you know, that there's this really crazy idea that's going around that, like, if we just message this to people correctly and tell them some bullshit so we can get them to spend their money in our direction, then we got them. And no more did this come off any more tone deaf recently to me personally than Wendy's. You guys have definitely heard about this. CEO Kirk Tanner of Wendy's touted that they were going to be offering dynamic pricing and daypart offerings in their menus, as well as AI-enabled menu changes and suggestive selling. I know that there's some marketing exec that was really patting themselves on the back for that one. And Kirk Tanner, when he made the announcement, sounded like he had just come up with the most revolutionary idea since the creation of the wheel. Like, I nailed it, guys. I know exactly what's going to turn Wendy's around. We'll be number one again in no time. Here we go. Dynamic pricing, daypart offerings, AI-enabled menu changes, suggestive selling. Some of you may be work in retail. Some of you have maybe worked in fast food. Some of you might even work in advertising or marketing. But for the rest of you who don't speak corporate or a rich, evil bastard, let me tell you what this really breaks down to. Dynamic pricing often gets conflated with surge pricing, and they're fairly similar in some regards. Now, if you know the term surge pricing, it's probably because you use a rideshare service like Lyft or Uber. And this basically means that they're able to change the price of a good or service as best reflects their market activity during those times, right? So in the case of Uber, for example, if it's a, let's say we're coming up on the weekend, let's say it's a Friday night. You and the crew are gathered around, maybe did a little pre-gaming. You're like, you know what? Let's be at least mildly responsible and not drive while we're going to go out and do our daily debauchery on a Friday night. Well, Uber also knows that a lot of other people like you have similar ideas. So whether a ride share service might be, let's say for the sake of argument, 75 cents per mile or something like that, right? Well, they know that on the weekends, there's going to be more people. They're going to want to jump into the Uber together. And they're going to need to charge more. So that's when you see the surge pricing go up. Now, all of a sudden, what would have probably been maybe a $20 ride to your local pub is now like $45. And that's just one way sometimes. It can be super cost inefficient for someone to try to use a service during those hours. Surge pricing / dynamic pricing is a similar kind of concept. And so what it's basically saying is like, you know what? A lot of people come to Wendy's for lunch. Or like maybe like a late dinner between like 7 and close. So during that time, we're going to take certain menu items off, put up the stuff that actually gets us the most amount of profit for the least amount of cost per unit and per effort being put into manufacture or create that product. And you fucking figure it out. Like, that's exactly what's happening now. You know, that's what it means. That day part offering means like, yeah, if it's noon to 2, maybe we don't offer up some of the more expensive items on our menu and we'll get the lower end items that we can still make a decent profit margin off of, but don't require a lot of extra work or us to put out a lot of extra product. And that's how we make more money, by limiting the choices. So the consumer's basically been cornered into picking whatever's on our menu. You can go somewhere else, but, you know, let's say it's your lunch break. How much time do you really have to check out all the other different options in your area? When you're here, you're not family. You're hostage. That's what we're looking at right now. It's not going to work out, I don't think, because, you know, customers are getting wise to this stuff. Here's another one of those buzzwords that I really loved: AI-enabled menu changes. This was really interesting the more I dug into it. What they're actually going to be doing is what you've seen in a lot of other places. Like I mentioned before, like self-checkout lanes, some of the fast food places, McDonald's being one of the most notorious and one of the earliest adopters of this, is what's essentially an ATM for your food. It's just a little stand-up kiosk. You go over there, you push buttons on the screen, just like you were working behind the register. But you order the food for yourself, and then you wait in a queue for the food to pop up. In the interest of expediency, sure, this sounds like a good idea on the surface. What it ends up doing, though, is it ends up taking away a little bit more of the customer service interaction. And I know we've seen those videos of the crazy lady who tried to punch through a window because she wanted an extra McFlurry or some chicken nuggets, or somebody threw an alligator through the window of a drive-thru because why not? It's Florida, right? Yeah, you don't want those kinds of customer service interactions, but if you do have an issue with your order, you need a person there to actually take care of that kind of thing. The little standalone kiosk that's bolted to the floor is not going to go back and get you your extra sauce or your missing two-piece nugget. That's not happening. This is a cost-cutting measure for the company. It's a way for them to maximize their profits while minimizing expenses. It's business to a certain degree, but it also takes away the experience of getting fast food. And it also diminishes the overall quality of the product, because if you're just shoveling shit out the door, who cares if it's actually good? Who cares if it's actually right? Who's really monitoring it? You have one point of contact. That's the person that puts the stuff into the bag from the grill. That's it. And they're really on this idea that, you know what, if we just get rid of more people and just put out product, we can make a lot of money. At that point, people are just going to stop showing up. I'm not for this move. I understand why it happens. I'm not a complete idiot, and I understand at least enough about economics to know that businesses are in it to make money. But at the end of the day, if your product or service offers no value to the public, what are you selling really? Just the food? Dude, I could make me a burger at home. It might take me a little longer than it would if I have a line of people in the back working for minimum wage or less, getting grease burns and no insurance. Yeah, I'll have to work a little harder, but I'll eat better, and I won't have to worry about you jacking up the price on me because I want a burger at 11:30 at night after I spend a night out drinking with the homies or was just too lazy to make dinner earlier, whatever the case may be. But they're really set on this. Suggestive selling is one of my favorite ones. Now, I worked in sales for a little while, and I worked in one of the worst sales departments you can work in, insurance sales, and I hated it. It's a soul-sucking, hateful, evil job. Insurance alone, especially in the United States, is a multi-billion-dollar industry, and it's a plague on the American spirit and on the American consumer. So if you work for insurance, I'm sorry to tell you this, you do the devil's work, you need to find another job. Insurance is basically theft, just like taxation. And while it's not necessarily my intention to sit up here and proselytize and preach from the pulpit to you guys about how you should spend your dollars or how you should avoid certain economic traps that are set for us by, you know, corporate interests and industries and whatnot, suggestive selling is exactly what it sounds like. When you have these limited menu options, these day part offerings, and these dynamic pricing situations happening, they're going to find ways to recommend certain items that you might not normally have purchased, but because of the limited menu that doesn't have maybe like the double baconator on it, right? They're like, well, you know, you could also get like, you know, a large cup of the chili and maybe a large fry, or maybe you could get a milkshake to add to it. They're going to try to suggest items that are also, again, low cost for them, high profit margin, and don't require a lot of effort, you know, and time to make. That's another way to basically just keep pumping poison into your veins while you're pumping cash into their pockets. It's a very simple concept, but you'd be surprised at how incredibly easy it is for suggestive selling to work. You see it all the time. You might not even recognize it. One of the most egregious examples that has happened since I can remember is the little shelves full of candy and snacks and, you know, little knickknacks and trinkets and stuff at the beginning of the grocery aisle, like right before you put your stuff on the conveyor belt to get it checked out. There's an extra stand-up. There's an end cap. There's a little cooler with drinks and sodas and, you know, water and stuff in there. It's all designed to get you to keep spending money right up until the moment that you walk out the door with your purchases. And suggestive selling looks different for every business or every industry, but it's always there. If you're mindful of it, you'll start to notice it and you'll be like, I see what you're doing. You're trying to sneak this in here and disguise it as a deal. Because these little items or whatever, like if you bundle them together, you know what I mean? You get this, that, and the other thing. Then you got a value meal because it's supposedly cheaper. In most instances, it ends up being about the same. And even if it's not, even if it is slightly cheaper for your pocket, what's happened is those higher ticket items are billed in with lower ticket items. And the overall profit margin still stays up on their end. You buy a bunch of shit you didn't really want to get what you think is a deal, and they're still making money hand over fist, and you're none the wiser. Now, Kirk Tanner eventually moonwalked on his initial comments after a week and a half of getting blasted via social media and news outlets, and memes are popping up all over the place. I made my own comparisons to like Uber and Lyft when it comes to this idea of surge pricing at Wendy's. So I know I'm not the only one. I'm not the most clever person in the world, so it definitely wasn't an original idea. I know somebody else out there thought of it at least as much as I did. But it's one of those moments, though, where in a weird way, the internet might not have been a mistake and mass media outlets might actually have worked in our favor because it really did paint these greedy CEOs in their true colors for everyone to see. And it really is like a Scooby-Doo situation where you find the monster, you pull the hat off, and it's just this guy in a suit underneath it just yelling at you, and I would have gotten away with it if it weren't for you pesky kids. That's what happened. They got Scooby-Dooed, and then they had to back all this shit up and be like, oh, we were just focus testing that. That's it. That's the idea. Focus testing. We wanted to put that buzzword out there and see if you guys were really going to dig the idea. It turns out you don't. So nah, we're not going to do it. And like, you know what it really is saying? I would have done it if I didn't get caught. If it weren't for the fact that somebody called me on my bullshit, I would have absolutely continued with this course of action. It's also one of the reasons why you'll notice that certain, like even rideshare services like Uber and Lyft and whatnot, they're struggling right now because now that people are actually to be more mobile since COVID restrictions have been loosened in a lot of places, completely eradicated, the ability for people to drive their own vehicles if and when they're able to is coming back into play. And rideshare services are going to have to lean more into surge pricing, or they're going to have to get way more creative with the offerings that they put out when it comes to using their services. But the average customer is starting to slowly become a little bit more savvy. We're getting wise to these tricks, which is one of the things that nobody in those upper echelons of a corporate entity want to see. They definitely don't want to see you get smart. They want to keep you dumb. They want to keep you scared. They want to keep you scrabbling and scraping for the scraps at the bottom of the barrel against your fellow man so that they can walk away with the big cash in their pockets. That's how it works. No one within the sound of my voice can possibly deny that that's exactly how it works and they've seen it in their own lives. Thinking about the value that you get for a certain service, I've been really bemoaning lately the loss of my Google Play library. I love music, and it's one of the fun things that I get when I'm driving around running errands or if I'm just doing something around the house. Putting my headphones on and just jamming the tunes is one of my favorite things to do, like a lot of you folks out there. But I pay for Pandora Radio as a premium service, so I don't have to listen to ads. I figure, you know, the $10 a month, I get an access to a wide variety and library of songs. That's cool. I don't have to buy any more music and stuff. But lately, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, but a lot of these apps are really shit in the bed. Every now and again, when I'm just in the house, Pandora will just disconnect. Wi-Fi is working. Cell phone service is still working, except for that one day. Thanks, AT&T. But, you know, then Pandora just decides, oh, I'm tired. You were listening to Chronic 2001. We're going to switch to a completely random station now. Blink, and it shuts off. I'm waiting for it to reload, and it puts on something I was not even thinking about listening to. Hadn't listened to in weeks, and it's like, you want to hear this, right? I'm like, no. Put back on Explosive, dude. I was listening to the drum beat. What the fuck? So I've been really stuck, though, because I had a lot of music on Google Play, And YouTube and Google can both bite my butt for this, because they gave you the opportunity, so they said, to be able to download your music library and then back it up for yourself personally. So you'd be able to own the songs that you paid for digitally. This idea of digital ownership has come up before on the podcast and also in popular culture, you know, whether you're into movies, music, gaming, the idea of quote unquote digital ownership has started to take a real sour turn for a lot of people, realizing that they haven't really paid for the thing. They've just paid for the right to be able to use the thing as long as the service that provides the thing stays alive. Hence, Google Play Music. When they decided they were going to drop and then convert over to YouTube Music, all of my music was gone. Hundreds of dollars in albums and singles that I purchased over the years evaporated like a fart in the breeze, and I was stuck. I emailed them. I called every customer service line I could think to try to get a hold of. I tweeted at them. I was in people's DMs for the companies. Like, hey, you guys have social media accounts. Let me hit those DMs. Be like, what is happening? Where's my stuff? And they were like, sorry. I'm like, I did the backup thing. I did all the steps. It told me this was working. And now it's gone. It's ghost. Finito. No mas. They're like, sucks. Sucks, don't it? I'm like, oh, it does. Oh, it does. And you guys are going to pay big for this at some point. Because I couldn't possibly have been the only one. And I just don't care for iTunes. I know everybody's like, it's the biggest music store in the world. I'm like, that always bothers me. Whenever I hear like, it's the biggest, it's the greatest, it's the most expansive, I go, sounds like there's a greedy asshole at the top just waiting to gobble up my coins. I'm not really for that life. So I've been looking around trying to find another service. You know what I mean? Like, I don't make a lot of money. So every little bit that goes out of my pockets, like, I have to make sure that it makes sense, right? It has to mean something. It has to actually provide, has to add value to my life for the cost that I'm going to spend on it. So, you know, like I mentioned earlier, if you want to stop by Patreon and drop some suggestions for a good music service that you use and that you recommend, I'm down to listen. I've tried Spotify. There's something about their interface and the way it operates I just don't get down with. iTunes, yeah, iTunes. Maybe it's the years of being an Android user. Maybe it's just the super elitism of people who are like Apple people. But every time I hear that, I'm like, I use iTunes for all my music. That's how it sounds in my brain. You know, somebody could be like, I use iTunes for all my music and I organize my libraries. All I hear is blah, 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 dollar sign, ching, ching. And it makes me want to throw myself into traffic. I know how harsh that sounds, but at the same time, it's like, I just don't want to feed another corporate giant if I don't have to. They're in my life enough already. They're in all of our lives enough already. If I can keep them from getting one more extra toehold in there, it's a win for me. And hopefully it'll be a win for us. So if you have suggestions, feel free to message me, leave a comment, or, you know, hit me up on Patreon, send me a message, and I'll be sure to share those not only on the paid Patreon episodes, but also on the free episodes too. Why not? This way we can all learn a little something. We can all get a little bit of good news. Because like I said, the news is horrible and this is no different. Here we go. Because you knew it was going to come down sooner or later. Good old Teflon Don, Mr. Candy Corn himself, Donald Trump, gets a win from his self-appointed Supreme Court overturning Colorado state ruling, which said that Donald Trump was to be removed from the Colorado state ballots because he was in violation of the 14th Amendment, Section 3 of the United States Constitution. And the Supreme Court said,
what Constitution? We don't know about no Constitution.
So he just got an ass-kissing victory, which ignores some potentially bothersome legal precedents. And you would think that a bunch of quote-unquote legal scholars would be able to see through this, but apparently these dum-dums missed it entirely. Now, they claim that the 14th Amendment, Section 3, doesn't apply to Donald Trump. And mainly, I think the reason why they're getting away with it is because his current trial that's happening as we speak, which would implicate him in the insurrectionist events that happened on January 6th, 2021, if he were convicted of those, he would be convicted under this particular section of our Constitution, which the way it's kind of worded, kind of shorthanding this, no person who's engaged in insurrection, rebellion, or traitorous actions against the United States may hold federal office unless a two-thirds vote from both houses of Congress declares otherwise. So what they're claiming is, because of that last little bit that's written in there, Colorado can't unilaterally make this decision to remove Donald Trump from the ballot, even though they have a viable contest to this until he's technically convicted of it in federal court. Colorado doesn't have the authority to do this without, like we said, that two-thirds vote from both houses of Congress to say, yeah, you're fine, you can take him off the ballots. He's obviously guilty of this particular activity and he doesn't deserve to be in the running. Well, now that we haven't seen the trial move forward, so many other diversionary tactics by Trump's team of legal assassins has been going down, not the least of which is the deliberate attacks against Fannie Willis, who is presiding over a case in Fulton County, which if you guys don't know about that, we could spend a whole other day on what is going on right there. They're basically trying to smear this woman and her former lover slash co, I don't know, like assistant counsel, maybe is what you call him. Nathan Wade, who was like working for the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. That's been a whole rodeo show and a half where even some of her own former co-workers are turning against her in an attempt to try to shut down that entire trial. It's a circus over there. Until those kinds of prosecutions actually happen and Donald Trump is convicted and arrested and imprisoned, he's still a viable candidate. And here's another kicker. If there's enough legalese that's written in there that it's potentially possible for him to get arrested, be convicted, get arrested, and go to prison, but there's a chance that he could end up winning the popular vote and then he could just pardon himself and is out of just like walk out of prison, just scot-free. So this Supreme Court has been stacked with justices that were appointed by Donald Trump. And even some of the ones who weren't are still kind of kowtowing and bowing. And I get to a certain degree that some of the legal challenges that they posited against the state of Colorado make sense. But it's really just getting off on a technicality. And it's a way to kind of cement their position so that they can't be, you know, somehow censured or whatever, removed from the court, which, you know, it's a lifetime appointment. But how long's your life got to be, really? You got a political opponent like Trump who declares on day one, I won't be a dictator except for day one. Really, dude? You said that out of your face? Yeah, I'd be worried too, I guess. But at the same time, like, aren't you supposed to stand for justice under the law? How is this justice? How is this even? Let's put it this way. It might be legal, but that doesn't make it ethical or morally right. Ethically or morally right. They're very different things when you start to break it down. What's legal is very different from what's right or what's moral. And that's one of the things that, like, you kind of have to look at a lawyer or a judge in that light. And, like, you have to be able to balance those variances in those ideologies to find the right, the correct and true path through to actual justice. And I think that they kind of shortchanged themselves and they may have set some dangerous legal precedents coming up in the future because with this clause being applied in this particular manner, it opens up the probability for other bad actors to seek and hold office while they just logjam Congress with a bunch of hearings and, you know, appeals and trials. And we all know how slow motion Congress is to do anything at all, ever, particularly when there's a supermajority on one side or the other, whether it's Democrat or Republican, because, you know, third parties don't matter because nobody thinks enough to bother with the third party. That's a whole other conversation I could get into. When these folks decide, yeah, you know, Donnie dodged a bullet this way, I bet I could do it too. It'll work. This is setting a precedent. This is with this Colorado overturning, with this overturning of Colorado's ruling. The federal government has basically said, you don't do anything until we tell you you can. And knowing how long it takes for us to do anything, It's like trying to talk to the trees in Lord of the Rings. You'll be here for ages. And by the time it's all said and done, we'll have another Donald Trump presidency again. And why not assume that he might try to go back to back? You never know. This could be one of those moments where they say, you know what? Why don't you write some new laws? As long as people keep voting you in, you could just stay president forever. Now, essentially, we've turned into either a basically like a soft version of a dictatorship, almost into our own oligarchy. Because as long as you have the power and the influence, you can make the rules and they can be whatever you want. Which is kind of how it's been since time immemorial, but that's not the way our democracy is supposed to function. It's terrifying shit. Because it takes away the rights of states to enact policy unless the federal government hands them a permission slip first. And this sword can cut both ways. Now, it does mean that there could be an opportunity for states to bond together and to try to, you know, finagle their way through the Supreme Court or around the Supreme Court. But then you have, again, more legal infighting, more delays, more taxpayer dollars wasted, and more shitty people being able to squeeze themselves into positions of power where they don't belong. It's a very scary and slippery slope, but it's one of those things that we're just going to have to, unfortunately, wait and see what happens, because everybody's going to be screaming from the left or the right. Folks are generally speaking more in the middle. Overall, more people sit in the middle than on either far end of the left or right spectrum of our political landscape. And it just feels like you can't get enough people in the middle to pull harder towards the middle. They tend to gravitate towards the polar opposites as a way to define themselves. And it's a stupid ideology to align yourself with either side, honestly, because neither side genuinely has the entire interest of the American people at heart. Like I said, most people kind of fall in the center or to the left or right of center, but they don't lean so far left or so far right that you see them out in the distance. I think that we're going to have a lot of stuff to deal with in a very short amount of time. And I'm worried for the future of our nation. I'm also worried for just the whole adage, like the battle for the soul of America. I think that battle's probably almost over, and I think we all lost. I don't know. I hate to be a downer, but at the same time, I don't want to lie to you guys. Like, when it comes to what I'm seeing and what I think, like, I've been worried about this for a very, very long time. And one of my pushes has been, get the fuck out of this country. I love you guys. You know, I was raised to love America and apple pie and salute the flag and support the troops and all that shit. And I don't, to the large degree, most of that still holds true, but there's so much more nuance and subtlety that underlies those ideas. The underpinnings of what make our society great are the things that are really being stripped out. And those pins are getting pulled one by one until the whole thing's going to unravel. It'd be like cutting the string on the bottom of a corset. Before long, somebody's titties are going to fall out, man. Like, it's not going to hold together. You got to worry about where this is going, how it's getting shaped, how it's getting messaged. Again, kind of a corporate thing. How it's being packaged and presented to you. And when I say do your own research, I don't mean go to whatever news agency A, B, or C you like. I mean go and find a book. Read a fucking book. Pick up a copy of the Constitution. You can get it online for free 99. Here's another idea. Go and get a copy of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Have them hang up in your house. Look at them every day. You know, learn a little bit more about how the political process works. Start to think a little bit more about how it actually impacts you, your family, your friends, your loved ones, your coworkers, your neighbors, humanity in general. This is an admonition at this point. It's not even preaching. I'm asking you, take an hour each week and just read a little bit of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and see if you don't start to question a lot more about what you think, about what you see in the news, and about how you've aligned yourself politically. Man, this stuff got me down bad because I started looking around and then I realized this was happening as well. Good old Florida, because woo! Why not? Florida has killed off DEI classes in colleges here in the state. Cool. Super cool. So for those of you who aren't aware, DEI stands for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. These classes are designed to kind of highlight certain social and socioeconomic injustices or to redirect the course of the narrative when it comes to how people of different races, classes, socioeconomic backgrounds, you know what I mean, religious beliefs, gender identities, sexual orientations, how they've been treated in the collective consciousness of the United States. These are important classes because it does give a bigger spotlight to how these issues impact us as a country, not just as individuals in our own insular communities or our self-ascribed communities, but how that kind of oppression, degradation, and disenfranchisement can affect and impact each and every one of us in our daily lives. These courses are important for the folks who are in the courses, the people that they're about, because it shows that we're all people and all of our history, all of our collective experience matters to everyone, whether you think it does or not. No man is an island isn't just some cute thing to say in a song. We really are all interconnected in some way. But thanks in no small part to adult Cabbage Patch Kid doll Ron DeSantis, passing some really shit legislation over the last year, these classes have now been cut. Most notably, the University of Florida has taken the biggest hit most recently this week, laying off 13 staff members and then 15 other faculty have either lost their jobs or have lost administrative appointments because the DEI programs have been removed from the University of Florida. Now, in the way that they're going to try to paint this, the fired staff are going to receive 12 weeks of pay, and they can apply to other positions by the 19th of April. Oh boy, thanks. I had a job. You fired me for doing the job that you hired me for. And now you're telling me I can get some money for a little bit, but, you know, good luck. You can try to apply for another position here at the school. Bitch, I already had a job. Why should I have to apply for a job? You should put me in another job. This isn't my fault. I didn't do anything wrong. I did what you asked me to do. And here comes the bullshit platitude statement of the week. Florida, University of Florida says they'll continue their, quote, commitment to universal human dignity. How? By telling your students that their history, their culture, and their unique perspectives on life and, you know, living in America don't mean jack shit unless they're heterosexual white folk? That's the message you're sending. We're committed to universal human dignity as long as you look like us. It's some good old boy shit if I ever heard it. To continue, here they go. As we educate students, these are quotes, by the way. I'm not making up a word of this shit right here. As we educate students by thoughtfully engaging in a wide range of ideas and views, we will continue to foster a community of trust and respect for every member of the Gator Nation. No. No, you're not. You literally have done the exact opposite of that by eliminating this entire branch of study from the curriculum. You have gone straight in the face of what you're saying. It's bullshit. We know it. We know it because we can see it. I can read English. I see that you're lying. I see what you've done. The proof isn't in the pudding. The pudding's all over the fucking wall. You guys are liars. And you've disenfranchised entire sections of your student body by doing this. You know what? You know anybody that goes to UF? I want you to clip this portion of the podcast and send it to them. This is a shout out to all the minority students, and the athletes, and the folks who are in LGBTQIA community, any other marginalized class that's going to be a part of these courses and being whoever is matriculating at this college right now. Take your ass and your tuition money and go somewhere else. Fuck UF. Let's see him try to make it to the top of the SEC with no black players. I might not be a popular statement, but it's true. You might not like to hear it, but it's accurate. Wait till like one third. That's better than one third. Wait till half of your offensive and defensive core walks off the Gator squad and decides to take their ass somewhere else. Let them go to Florida State. Seems like they might try to, you know, hold on to these DEI courses for a little while longer. When tuition rates start to drop because people don't want to go to your school because they know that when they go there, they're not welcomed. They're not being represented. They're not being understood or listened to. Let them vote with their wallets. And they go, you know what? You don't give a fuck about my history? I don't give a fuck about this school. The problem is that you got to be able to hit these people where it hurts. If one thing's come through all this messaging, I hope it's this. People tend to only care when they're affected by something. So affect them. Don't sit around and wait for it to be your turn to get bent over somewhere. Stand up and take a little bit of action. It doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take a lot. But the little bit that you do creates a snowball effect. Maybe this week it's 10 students decide to leave. Okay. Like, no big deal. No sweat. We've got how many other thousands of people on the campus? Then next week they're like, hey man, my friends all left. Why'd you leave? Oh, I left because they decided that it was cool for Ron DeSantis to say that slavery benefited black people. Almost in a way saying he kind of wishes we were still back in chains picking cotton. Word? Yeah, you didn't read the news for the last year or so? That's what he's saying. That's the message that they're putting out. And a lot of your other conservative constituency, they're following along suit. I don't want to be here. Fuck UF. Leave. I'll go to Tennessee. You know, I'll go to Vanderbilt. I'll go to UA. You know what I mean? I'll go to University of South Florida. I'll go to a community college first, where at least if they respect my dollars. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to respect me as much as you respect my dollars. Like, you know what? Because your dollars are here, we will teach the classes that you want to hear. We will do everything we can to make you feel like you are a part of this community. Instead of just offering some bullshit platitude and then axing an entire wing of our educational system by telling you in no uncertain terms, we don't care about you. All we want is your money. Some other college will definitely step up and be like, we'll take your money and we'll teach you the shit you want to know. How about that? Go there. Go there. Use the power of your poll. Go and vote in your elections. I cannot stress this enough. If you are within the sound of my voice, you need to register to vote. Even if you don't have, if you have closed primaries, like the state of Florida, the only reason they have closed primaries is specifically so they can disenfranchise third-party candidates. That's it. The state is a red state and has been since time immemorial. And the only reason they haven't gone against closed polls is because, haven't voted against closed primaries is because it works for them. But we find a candidate that's like, I don't want this. And I think that we should have more freedom and flexibility to find people who more accurately represent the values of the people who live in the state of Florida. Hey, I'm voting for that guy. Vote with your pocketbook. Like I said, take your tuition money somewhere else. When he's going to offer surge pricing? Shit, I can eat Burger King. I can eat Taco Bell, maybe not me, but you know what I mean? You do that for yourself. I can make my lunch at home. I don't have to give you my money. Make them pay for it. Use your platform. You got a social media presence? Speak from it. Show people. This is in black and white. I didn't make this up. I didn't dream this up. This is actually happening, and it's happening to all of us. Let them see what's up. Be ready to take the hits, too, because it's gonna happen. There's going to be somebody who's going to come at you sideways. But when you're armed with the power of the truth and the facts as they're presented, as they're written down, as they're videotaped and put right in front of your face, go like, did they not say this? Did they not do that? Then these things are absolutely true. And by that rationale, you're a dumbass. Sometimes you got to let people know about themselves. Just know that you're sitting in the right. Hold on to your belief. And then, you know, as you get new information, make sure you put it out there. Let other people be aware of it. We can't do this by ourselves. Again, no man is an island. That means that we all have to work on helping one another. You know what I mean? Through good and bad. You know, let's talk about some good. You know, let's talk about some good before we wrap this up. Going to the media stuff, I'll tell you right now, it's slow motion on Baldur's Gate 3. There's been so much stuff happening over the last week. I haven't even really looked at Baldur's Gate except for the couple times I played it on stream. And then like the other night when I got to play with my wife and friends on Saturday, and it was cool. It was fun, but we didn't have nearly a long enough session. I would love to go on longer, but you know, it'd be what it is. I love those sessions too, because I get to hang out with my homies and my wife. And it's fun times. And I love the game, you know, just with so much drama in the GSC. It's kind of hard being little old Link I be. I'm trying. Actually, it's GCS, whatever. I was working on it. I workshopped the idea. It didn't work, but that's all right. I'll try again. Anyway, Avatar The Last Airbender, everything I've seen of it looks great. I'm still a little behind on the show. Haven't finished the entire first season yet. It's only 8 episodes, but for some reason, it feels like there's just never enough time to sit and watch. I'll get to it hopefully this weekend. Sometime this week, I'll get a chance to sit and watch the rest of it, and I'll give you guys a little bit of what I think about it. A little bit more of what I think about it, actually. Because I do really enjoy what I've seen so far. And I think that most of the qualms and quibbles I've seen are just tiny things that people really could just get over. I think that overall, the show's worked out really well. It's really well casted. It's very beautifully shot and costumed. The actors are great. They're great. And they really kind of captured the essence of the animated show. And without giving too much away, I think that if you're a fan of the animated show, you will really enjoy this. Will it be your favorite thing? Maybe not, but I think you'll really enjoy it and you'll see the love that was put into it come through. Speaking of art, animation, and whatnot, I think I'm going to take some time this weekend to just maybe, if I don't stream much at all, just do some artwork. If I get some questions through Patreon, I'll record a Patreon episode this weekend so that I can get ready to go out. And then maybe work out how to record guest spots and interviews for this show. It's a thing that I've wanted to do, but I haven't really found the right way to do it or the right guests to have on. Although I've reached out to a couple of folks that I know in the area, and we'll wait and see if they ever answer back. It's been a while, and I'm figuring, like, you know, sometimes silence is a no. Sometimes silence is a I'm just busy as fuck. So I'm holding out hope that I'll be able to hear from at least one of those folks this week, and maybe work out how to get some guests in here. At the very least, I can record a spot and have them pop in and say hello, how they doing, talk about some things, even if they're not in for a full episode. That'd be cool. I'd really like that. And then if I get to finish Avatar The Last Airbender, I'm going to treat myself to a new show that I saw recently on Netflix called A Killer Paradox. The first episode is wild. It's a show out of Korea. Follows a young man who just seems like, you know, your normal, you know, slacker kind of character that you see in, you know, a lot of, you know, more like YA kind of shows, you know, but you just work in a regular 9-to-5, you know, low paying job, going to and not really going to, kind of flunking out of school and just half assing it through life until a wild event happens and he unlocks something in his mind. It's an interesting premise. It's not a necessarily unique or new one, but it does posit some interesting storylines and whatnot. So I'm hoping that it's going to turn out really well. I'm going to try to watch some more of that this weekend, give myself a little bit of a brain break from all the news and thinking and stuff, just for a day. You know, I deserve a day to just stop and let my brain rot a little bit. Why not? You know, maybe I'll find one of those music services you guys will recommend and I'll give it a spin. See if I can buy a couple of Brother Ali albums. You know, I missed those albums. Maybe pick up some old Wu-Tang Clan stuff. Get some hip-hop back in my life. And maybe pick up some Juan Luis Guerra. You know, just some classic Latino music. That sounds like a good idea. That'd be a good way to cap off the weekend, I think. But yeah, and again, like I said, if you find value in this podcast, feel free to share it with anybody. And if you've got some questions or whatever, hit me up. Let's go back through, cap this episode off right. Check out streamlabs.com/linkib/merch if you want some Wandering One Studios or LinkIB stream merch. More stuff is on the way, I promise. I haven't given up. It's just been a little nutty around here, so I'm working on it. Speaking of, though, I will be on Twitch throughout the week, so you can check me out at twitch.tv/linkib. That's LINKIBE. I'm going to be switching my Sage's Sanctuary stream over to Sundays instead because my usual D&D game has been canceled until further notice for Sundays. So I figure I'd give myself Saturday to just veg. And then Sunday, I can do a stream. This also gives me a little bit more freedom to move around a little bit on the weekends. You know what I mean? I don't have to be like, oh, I would come out, but it's Saturday and I do this on Saturday. Like, fool. Everything pops off on Saturday. I'm like, I know, I could have a social life again. We'll see. Also, if you appreciate the content that you're getting here, please consider supporting me on Patreon. It's only $3 a month for 2 bonus episodes that are curated from your questions, comments, and advice requests and the like. So please pop over to patreon.com/wanderingonestudios. Sign up for the 7-day free trial, you know, before you like, try before you buy kind of thing. Give it a spin. Try it out. Check it out. See if you like it. And if you do, at the end of that 7-day period, if you want to throw down $3 a month to get 2 extra podcast episodes where you can hear your questions voiced through this voice, feel free to support there. I would really appreciate it. And as always, every time I get to say this, I love it so much. You guys have been wonderful. Doing the podcast has been such a joy. I'm having a blast doing it, and I hope that you guys are enjoying it as much as I am. Thank you all so much for every little thing that you do. Even if all you do is listen to it and maybe tell a friend about it, that means the world. Word of mouth, best advertising ever. Tell a friend, tell a coworker, tell a family member, tell that cute guy that you saw at the library, you know, whatever. Just put the word out there. And for those of you who support it financially as well, I sincerely do appreciate it. I know it's not easy to peel off bucks now these days, but if anything little thing that you do, it's not wasted on me. I totally get the gravity of it, and I really, really respect you and appreciate you for it. And as you know, as much as everybody else who's just sharing it around, talking it up, telling me, hey man, you're doing a great job, keep up the good work, that really means the world to me. All right, guys, I'm getting out of here. I got some stuff to do tonight, so I will catch up with you guys later. Be good, drink some water, remember to go vote, use your power, and I'll see you a little further on down the road. Peace.